You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Cole Molesky, bringing you daily Timberwolves content. Make sure to check out the LockedOn.com website, a convenient place to find all of your favorite Locked On hosts and shows. Also, make sure to check out the Locked On NBA podcast. The Locked On NBA podcast is a great way to get up to date on action around the league and get prepared for some upcoming teams a little early, a little ahead of the jump, getting ready via injury reports and all that. All that stuff is on the Locked On NBA podcast. All right, so Jimmy Butler is no longer a Timberwolf. Here to break it all down with us is the repeat offender, the man who needs no introduction, Seth Topol of KLJR. He hosts The Scoop. We've had him on here plenty of times, but I could think of no one better to give us reactions and his take on Jimmy Butler finally leaving the Timberwolves. Thank you so much, Seth, for joining the show.
As always, Colton, a pleasure. And, it's nice to go from one of those guys at the back end of the bench that plays sparingly in terms of contributing to the show to now working my way into the regular rotation. I'm always happy to be back on, and especially considering the news that we're talking about today.
No, yeah, let's dive right into it. I wanted to cover a couple things here on the show. So the first thing I wanted to do was kind of takeaways from Jimmy Butler's year and change here, kind of what you gleaned from that. Was it worth it? We should talk about that. The trade in general that happened on draft night, which seems so long ago in 2017. I was just a young lad still in college when that happened. And now I feel like this grizzled old man after covering the Timberwolves for a full season. And so now we have to discuss, was it worth it? What are they getting back? Does that make them a viable team now still in the West to contend for a playoff berth? What the expectations are around that team? All that good stuff. But first, let's get to what are some of the takeaways from the Jimmy Butler era in Minnesota. Kind of what, when you look back on this in 5 years, what are you going to remember? Are you going to remember the fights in the locker room? Are you going to remember the discontent? Or are you going to remember the playoff berth? Are you going to remember some of the moments between Jimmy Butler and Tyus Jones and their bromance? Are you going to remember some of the great games that they had, the December run? What's going to stick out to you from this?
Well, that's a great question. I think the thing that I'm going to take away most is what could have been. That'd be the big phrase that I use to remember this trade. Looking at all the pieces of this, obviously you look at what you gave up to get Butler, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Chris Dunn. And LaVine looks like he is fitting in nicely in Chicago. He's averaging, I want to say, somewhere around 25 points a game, so you miss that a little bit. But the fact that Butler was able to get this team back to the playoffs after a lengthy drought, got them to 47 wins, which was a tremendous accomplishment. And you felt like this team was dangerous, considering that they were playing like the number three overall seed in the West before Jimmy Butler got hurt. It looked as though they were going to be able to, you know, maybe not, as we saw, not contend against the Houston Rockets and the Golden State Warriors. But then again, this team was just, they were on another level at Target Center, and it seemed like they were poised to put together a lengthy run with Butler in tow. And then everything just kind of changed. It didn't seem like it was enough that this team made the playoffs. Butler, obviously the competitor that he was, he wanted to be able to go toe-to-toe with Golden State and end up being a team that could get a couple of blows in and maybe at some point overtake them. And I don't know if he looked at the composition of other teams throughout the league. Obviously, the Warriors, with all the superstars they have, Oklahoma City, having Russell Westbrook and Paul George. Even Boston having the talented cast around Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. I think he just kind of felt like he needed one more of those A-list players to help get the Wolves over the top. And unfortunately, it was not feasible for that to happen here in Minnesota with all the contracts, the Wiggins max, the Towns max, Taj, Gorgie, Jeff Teague, all that money. It was not going to be possible for Butler to get what he was looking for. And at that point, I think his frustration started to set in, and we saw all the things that happened in the offseason. I think we look at it a little bit more negatively because of how it was handled. If it would have been handled in a more, I'll just say professional manner, I think everybody involved would have felt a little better about it. But you have all these incidents, the interviews with ESPN, talking to Tibbs repeatedly and expressing a desire to leave. And then during the season, these days of just general soreness and not playing, I think it was handled poorly. And I'm sure that will be what a lot of people look at now that it's done. And we don't know the impact that Covington and Sarge are going to have on this team. Maybe that will be enough to kind of give them a little boost and get them back into the swing of things. But it's going to be remembered by me for the potential that the team showed. But in the end, it didn't seem like it was enough for Butler, and he had to go try to find a better way to do it elsewhere.
It's interesting you say that, just because when he joined the team, and you have somebody who's kind of in the middle of his peak, reaching the end of it, but he's got all this experience, he's such a good player on both ends, and he's joining a team that had a guy who was on the cusp, and then before the season starts, signed a max deal, had another young guy who was about to sign a max deal. You kind of looked at it as a four-year thing, you know? And so when it's been done after a year, it seemed a little bit like a flash in the pan, but I still think that I will remember it for the playoff berth after all the bad basketball we've seen in Minnesota. I will remember it as a playoff run, and whatever that costs, it felt so good to get to the playoffs. I feel like after that Denver Nuggets game, when they won in overtime to get to the playoffs, after that game, I probably would have given up like a firstborn son to ensure that that happens and that they don't have just another Wiggins and Towns season where they're really good on a bad team. That said, it is interesting that after a year of trying to work with those young guys on the roster and after a really disappointing run in the playoffs, it kind of seemed like Jimmy Butler looked around and said, this isn't it. This isn't it for me, and this isn't it for the West. And he got out of there quick. It also interesting that he's joining another really young team. I understand that the 76ers got to the playoffs on their own last year, but still another very young roster that he's joining. We'll see how that goes. But I think I will remember this for the playoff run and the breaking of the drought, and hopefully the staging of the next stanza of Timberwolves basketball, which will, I'm hoping, include a lot of success. I guess kind of this bleeds into, was it worth it? For me, I think it was, especially the way their offense is playing now. I think that offense isn't cheap now in the NBA, but I think it's easier to come by now than maybe even like 8 years ago. And so I don't think that giving up Zach LaVine, and by the way, he is averaging, you're right about on, 27.2 points per game. Wow. And yeah, I mean, he is averaging a lot, and I think you end up probably losing more in the Markkanen side of this with now that Justin Patton is in Philadelphia with the 76ers, and you really have gotten to see what a minute and a half total of him playing basketball on an actual NBA floor as opposed to just the G League. So the draft pick is probably what you lose more than LaVine and Chris Dunn in my book, because I think you can find offense. I think Wiggins and Okogie and Towns are all going to be offense enough to where I don't think they end up missing LaVine too much. And his defense was a negative anyways. And so I think Markkanen is the side of that where you really think, maybe the Timberwolves really missed on a draft pick as opposed to anything else in the players they gave up. But for me, I think just getting back to the playoffs, establishing somewhat of a winning culture, even if the locker room did turn toxic at the end, teaching or getting Towns and Wiggins playoff reps and getting their feet wet in the playoffs, I think is valuable. I think there is value to that. I think knowing how to navigate an NBA season as winners, there's value to that. And so I think in the end, I think I would go down and say that this is still worth it, even with how ugly it turned out in the end. And I say that because I think it gets a whole lot uglier if you don't make the playoffs and Tibbs is the head coach and you bring in all these veterans. I think that whole situation gets a lot uglier if you don't have a playoff berth to kind of tag with it.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And that bought Tibbs some time as well. If he would have gone through the first couple of years with the team were not stellar. Actually, it was his first year that wasn't stellar. Then they brought in Butler and got to 47 wins, and now this year has been a poor one.
Well, and that's really, if you're looking at this from a coaching standpoint, is that the biggest loss of this? Is that Butler bought Tibbs another year, and maybe he's out this year if Butler isn't here?
Yeah, that is certainly a way to look at it, and I think that, going back to it, is still the biggest overarching issue with this team is just scheme and philosophy from Tibbs. I don't know, like, looking at the moves that he's made, I mean, yeah, probably overpaid for Jeff Teague. The Taj Gibson move has worked out fine. He's been a very productive player here, and you brought in Derrick Rose, and he has been very, very good for the most part this year. So the moves that he's made, I don't think are really, you know, as bad as people make them out to be. It's been the scheme fit, and I think Butler getting them to the playoffs last year bought him more time, but as we've seen, there really has not been any sort of a change. It's just continuing to run what is, by and large, a pretty outdated system. You're trying to, in Tibbs' scheme, you're trying to force teams from attacking the basket. You're trying to get them to take long twos or threes. And what is the biggest thing that the NBA is doing now in terms of scoring? It's three-pointers. So teams that come in and play the Wolves offensively, they're like, okay, we'll take the three-pointers. And the Wolves, their offense continues to be, although it's been better this year, it has been a lot better in terms of three-point attempts. They continue to try to kind of grind it out, and they'll take a two with the shot clock winding down when you might be playing a Golden State team that shoots the ball in 10 seconds on both sides of your possession, and maybe they go one for two on threes, but you take all that time on your offensive end to get a two, and they've run basically the same amount of time, and they've taken two shots. That math, they'll take that math every time. So I think that ultimately still is the biggest issue with this team, but it will be very interesting to see now that Butler's gone what kind of leash Tibbs is given to try to get this thing back on track.
Yeah, and before we get into kind of shots and everything like that, we're going to talk about We're going to talk about what was the return on this team. Was it worth Jimmy Butler? Did they give up too much? We'll break down all that, but first, we're going to take a break for some sponsors. All right, Jimmy Butler is no longer on the Timberwolves. Instead, it's going to be Robert Covington and Darius Arch. On the Timberwolves, they traded for Jimmy Butler on Saturday, and Jared Bayless was also part of that package. Jimmy Butler was sent with Justin Patton to the 76ers. We've been talking about the Jimmy Butler saga in Minnesota. Was the Jimmy Butler trade worth it at all for Minnesota? Now we're going to get a little bit into the trade package itself. And the fun thing to do right after this was, did your team get shellacked or did they come away a winner? And while these guys haven't played at all, and so you got to be careful with how you judge it right off the bat, just first glance, knowing these guys from the other team, how they played on the 76ers, you've got one team in the Timberwolves who are attempting, like you said, more shots from three. They're attempting 30.2 shots from three-point range this season. The Philadelphia 76ers averaging 33.1 shot attempts from range. So there's shots to be had from deep for these guys, and Robert Covington is averaging 39% from three-point range, a career best for him so far this season, while Dario Saric is down in his three-point shooting 30% this year. You did see last year the flashes that he could be really awesome. He averaged 39% from three last year, and so you do see the flashes of what he can be, given just him knocking down the shots and the right opportunities for him. Looking at this trade, I don't think Jared Bayless will ever see really any meaningful minutes. So looking at this trade from the two guys they got for Jimmy Butler and giving up on Justin Patton, was this a worthwhile deal for the Timberwolves? They also get a 2022 second-round pick, by the way. But was this worth it for the Timberwolves? Did they get shellacked, or are they winners out of this trade?
Well, I think given the alternative that Butler was just going to leave at the end of the season, and the way that they allowed this to play out, you have to take it as a win because they were able to get Butler off the team, and now you get a chance to look at some role playing guys and Saric especially. He is going to be an intriguing player to watch as the rest of the season goes on, where he fits into the rotation, what he can do exactly, because he kind of profiles as a nice player to put next to Karl Anthony Towns. If he can work his way into a reliable option in the starting rotation, does he do enough to push Taj Gibson to the bench? You look at the other deals that were evidently in place at various points in time. A couple of players from Houston and four first-round picks. I think it was Marquise Chris and
Brandon Knight, yeah.
I think were the ones that were going to be included in that deal. So that is – Houston's basically giving you their worst players just to make the salary match up. And then you get the four first-round picks, which this year's first-round pick is going to be – well, depending on if Houston can get things back on track, you're looking at it likely being in the late 20s, which does not really hold all that much value. Then 2 years from now, they'll have another pick, and Harden and Chris Paul will be getting up there in age. So maybe you get a little better. Maybe it's between 20 and 15, and then the next two picks after that, they're every other year because you can't trade picks in multiple seasons. So that was one of them, and I mean that really doesn't do much for me unless Houston absolutely free falls. Then you got yourself a couple of nice picks on the back end, and then the other deal was at various stages Josh Richardson and other players. But I think the Wolves at that point got a little greedy in what they thought they were going to be able to get for Butler, and credit to Miami for holding firm, because Richardson is off to a phenomenal start this year, and I want to say he's averaging something like 25 points a game and is shooting the lights out to start the year. So they held firm, and then at that point for the Wolves, as things continued to spiral, it's like we got to just take what we can get. And that's not to say that they didn't get anything back in return, but I would say that compared to the other offers on the board, I would put this, of those three, I would put this second. But if Saric, if he's able to develop and turn into a reliable player, a starter, then I think this looks a lot better down the road. But for now, I think you did get a couple of good players back in return. Not quite the level of the Richardson deal, but you kind of burned that bridge earlier. So I would say the Wolves did well in this trade, considering the circumstances, and we'll see how much the addition by subtraction weighs in as well.
Well, and at the end there, Miami, I saw reports that they ended up pulling Josh Richardson off the table. And I'm just saying, if you maybe he doesn't play that fiery hot in Minnesota, but if you do get that deal done earlier, Richardson is part of that package for the Timberwolves. So that's one of those things where if you're able to pull the trigger earlier, you probably get a really good player. And I believe it was, what was it, last year, the year before, he signed a four-year, $42 million deal. So it's like he's on a really great contract. He's playing really well. He's a good two-way player. He'd really help the perimeter defense. So it's a bummer they didn't pull that trigger earlier. As far as the guys that did get Robert Covington, Darius Arch, I had somebody ask me on Twitter where Robert Covington would play if you think Wiggins goes to the two or if he stays at the three and Covington goes to the two. I think it's basically the same result either way. I think those guys are pretty fluid as far as I think matchups will just dictate who's where. I would really love to see them go uber small ball, or maybe not uber small ball is the wrong word, but go small ball and play Covington a little bit at the four and have Towns, Covington, Okogie, Wiggins, and Derrick Rose out there. I think that could be a really fun lineup. I also think it would be fun to throw out Covington, Sarge, Okogie, Derrick Rose, and like Towns, or do like a second, do a couple second string guys in there. Maybe go Sarge and Gorgie, and throw out Covington and, or throw out Sarge and Gorgie, and maybe do Derrick Rose and Wiggins out there. And I don't know. There's just a few ways you can play with this and have fun with it. I think the guys they brought in, though, really help floor spacing, and I think Robert Covington is going to help their defense. He's averaging right now, I talked about the three-point percentage and how that's up from years past, but he's averaging 1.8 steals per game and 1.8 blocks per game. That is the most blocks he's ever averaged. And again, 13 games only into the season, but that's a career high in blocks so far, and also one of his best marks in steals. Only in 2016-17 was he better in steals by a 0.1 percentage. So his defense is there. I think he's not going to be the defensive guy Butler is, obviously, but his defense is there. He's going to clog some passing lanes. He's going to help with the perimeter defense, and I think he helps spaces the floor really well. And again, the Timberwolves at the end of that West Coast road trip kind of got back. They have been doing a really good job playing deep into their bench, really showing some versatility. And then at the end of that road trip against the Clippers and the Kings, they kind of reverted back to their play. Or excuse me, I think it was the Lakers and Kings. Reverted back to where they play the starters kind of a heavy amount of minutes and play a little tighter on the bench. And they just, especially bringing in these two guys, they have a pretty deep bench now, I would say. And I think you've got to be creative and got to play a few guys in a few different ways and be versatile and really, really be open to playing and tinkering around over the next couple of weeks and figure out what you have here and then attack December, I think, like they did last year. And because they're only, what is it, like three games out of the fifth spot in the West right now. And if you just experiment a little bit here throughout the end of November and then attack December like you did last year, you can work your way up to the seventh spot in the West really quickly, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think we saw a little bit at the end of the season last year, Tibbs' willingness to go with those smaller lineups. And I think he's going to like having Covington, as you alluded to, a versatile defender who will allow him. Yeah, I would love to see a little bit of him at the four and just kind of slot things down so you get those really good defensive lineups in. And whether or not he will actually do that, of course, that remains to be seen. But I think this is going to give them a little bit more of an opportunity to try some new age things, quote unquote. Because, yeah, Tibbs has to look at this like he is coaching for his job the rest of the way. And if he continues to do the same things that he's done throughout the start of this year, well, then his stay here is going to be a short one. But if they can get some things figured out, try some new things, and get these guys all playing together as a team now that Butler is gone, well, then maybe he sticks around for another year or so. But it's all on Tibbs now to put the matchups together and to try to find the right fit, because he doesn't have Jimmy Butler to bail him out anymore.
Last thing before we head out here, The Nets play the Timberwolves, their first home game back from the road trip. The starting projected lineup is Rose, Wiggins, Covington, Sarge, Towns. That's on according to NBA.com. You think that holds up? You think they start Sarge and play Covington at the three, and they're passing up on Taj Gibson in the starting lineup?
I think they will do that at least to start. And Gibson, credit to Gibson for saying all the right things about, you know, I'll play wherever. I'll play wherever they put me, as long as it helps out the team. So he's not going to be a guy that's going to ruffle feathers. If his role is best suited, coming out off the bench and helping to lead the team a little bit that way, then he's going to do it. So I think they'll try it just to see what Sarge has next to Towns, because I think that's the long term play. But if that doesn't necessarily work, then I think they'll quickly go back to Gibson at the four. I think Covington's pretty safely slotted in that three spot for the rest of the season because he's been around the league more. He's going to know what he needs to come in and do, and they'll be able to use him on some of the better scorers for opposing teams, and hopefully he'll be able to hold up his end of the bargain.
Yeah, I mean, with the way Derrick Rose and Taj Gibson are approaching the game, and Anthony Tolliver too, really just being available to plug in wherever, I think that's really helpful when you're kind of learning and growing and still figuring a lot of stuff out on this Timberwolves team, to have veterans that are just, we'll do whatever it takes and we'll be whatever we need to be on a given night. I think that's super helpful, especially when you have a trade go down a few weeks into the season and you have new guys coming in and joining the roster. Right now, Vegas, going according to the Las Vegas Review Journal, the Timberwolves have been bet down to a 2.5-point favorite after opening at a -4. And okay. The over-under right now is at 224.5 after opening at a 223.5. I would say that's probably about right as far as the spread, just because Minnesota is such a different team at home. And the over-under, I don't know. I feel like there's some kinks that the Timberwolves work out right away. But then once the three-point shooting starts to click at some point in the third quarter, that's when they really open up stuff. I see this being more of a 115, or maybe even like a 110-105 kind of game, 110-102. Little under the over-under that Vegas has of that. But I just feel like this could be kind of a boggy start for the Timberwolves.
Yeah, it's going to take them a little while to put all the pieces together, and unfortunately they don't really have all that much wiggle room with how they've started the season, but they get a chance to get all these pieces put together at home, which is a nice benefit. So they'll be able to get some nice reactions from the fans, because I'm willing to bet that even if Jared Bayless plays a little bit in this game, he's in their first game, he'll get a standing O. I doubt he will, but the fans, I think, were so done with Butler at the end that they will stand and cheer for they would have stood and cheered for whoever ended up coming back in return.
Well, here's the thing too, is that I know that these are new guys coming in, but Derrick Rose has been playing really well at point guard. You have guys like Wiggins and Towns and Okogie who are going to play underneath three-point shooting that Sarge and Covington is going to give them. Their game is going to give them. So as far as a role, it's kind of open. There's not like a guy on the roster right now. I mean, I guess you could go with Anthony Tolliver, but he's coming off the bench. There's not a guy in the starting lineup, if you're looking at just Wiggins, Towns, Rose, that is going to really take a bunch of their shots that you're looking to them to mostly go to. And I think Rose's and Wiggins' games, and even Okogie, I think they probably have him shoot less three-pointers when he's on the floor with Covington and Sarge at the same time. I think that he is just such an athlete, getting to the rim may be better for him until he finds a rhythm from range. So I think that both these guys kind of come in and complement the style of play that they're joining in the Timberwolves versus trying to compete with other guys in trying to get specific shots. I think that there is shots very much available from three-point range for both of these guys. And so I think that helps kind of ease them into this. And I think they actually could probably win, despite all of the stuff that's happened over the weekend and the road trip. I think they can actually beat the Nets tonight at home in their first game back.
Yeah, I would agree. The Nets have been doing some pretty nice things here this year, but they do slide into that category of a team that that the Timberwolves should be able to beat, even with new pieces coming in and out. So yeah, I would agree. I think the Wolves get a win tonight. I think that will be a huge lift for this team as they start this very important homestand. So yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how everything molds together. And more importantly, the thing I'm looking for is just to see what Tom Thibodeau does now with this team. And what sort of changes he makes now that that Jimmy Butler's gone.
For sure, for sure. We're all waiting on pins and needles for what that looks like. Seth, thank you again so much for joining the show. As always, it's been a pleasure. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves